So I'd like to call the meeting to order and acknowledge that we have Trustee Nunez, Trustee Cousin, Trustee Ribeiro, Trustee McDermott, and myself, Trustee Elliker, in attendance. I'd like to skip over item one and go to approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
This is Trustee Cousin, so moved.
Do I hear a second?
Trustee Nunez, second.
I've been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion on the minutes? Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes, Trustee Nunez?
Aye.
Trustee Cousin?
Aye.
Trustee Ribeiro?
Aye.
Trustee McDermott?
Aye.
And I am an aye, so the minutes pass. Moving on to item 3A, Administrative Matters, Chart National LP Indemnification Clause.
Trustee Elliker, Jack Struther from my office is supposed to present. I don't know if he's here. Could we skip over that item?
Happy to do that. So let's move on to item 3B, Administrative Expenses for Fiscal Year 2021-2022. Hooker and Holcomb. We've skipped over that one too.
Well, I think Hooker and Holcomb's here.
Oh,
unless you wanted to skip over.
No, let's go for it.
Well, we have the presentation for the experience study.
That's item C. Item B is administrative expenses for fiscal year 2021-22, Hooker and Holcomb. Perhaps it can be just grouped together because.
Yeah, we don't have a separate presentation for expenses.
Right. Okay. We'll dive in, Richard.
Carolyn,
Richard, the floor is yours.
Well, should we just go back a moment on the administrative expenses? I believe that you did put together a proposed amount for the budget. Is that correct? Rich?
Correct. We followed the past procedure where we looked at expenses through June 30th, 2020, and we rounded that up and used that in the calculations in our experience study.
And do you have those numbers? Are you prepared to? I have those numbers, or maybe Leanna, do you have the numbers that Rich came up with?
Yeah, so we received numbers, but then our office with Mike Gormley looked at those numbers because it seemed like there were a few things missing. So we worked to, that was the Excel sheet that we sent late last night. Let me share it for a second. So we put together fiscal year 19, 20, and 21, although fiscal year 19 and 21 are not complete, obviously, because the rest of 21 hasn't happened yet. And 2019, we only had access to very last minute from January of 2019. So it does not include July of 2018 to December of 2018. This first tab does not include the investment managers. This second tab is just the investment managers minus the ones that are auto debited. And this third tab includes both tabs one and tab two put together. I believe in past practice, the administrative expenses, correct me if I'm wrong though, did not include the investment managers. However, that's sort of the debate of if they should be included because technically they are an expense to the fund. That includes, you know, all of the bills that have been on each monthly agenda. And then there are a few that are just auto debited each month that the trustees don't approve on.
So this is Carolyn. So the question before the trustees is if you wish to include the managers. We do not have the information for those that are auto debited. And if you wish to include those in this matter, will need to be continued until another meeting, because the trustees need to vote on the administrative expenses that will be included in the 21-22 fiscal year budget. So at the moment, if you looked at the most complete year, you'd have $1,220,000. And then if we followed what Hooker and Holcomb has done in the past, we would add 2.5% to that number.
Just as a point of clarity for purposes of the valuation, we include an estimate of admin expenses, and the investment return is net of investment expenses.
Okay. So it makes that's very helpful. So it makes sense, Leanna, to go back to tab one, which
this doesn't.
Tab one, yeah. Is that mm-hmm. tab one?
Yeah.
Which would not include. So, Rich, do you net it from Raymond James and Morgan Stanley as well?
The 7.75% return is an assumption that's net of expenses. So after expenses are taken out of the return, you get 7.75%.
Okay. So I'm sorry to do this in front of the trustees. So it makes sense that this is the first tab to include everything but the 310,690.47 that are on the first tab. Is that correct, Rich? And then add 2%.
This would be for Morgan Stanley and Raymond James.
Right, but that's already considered in the way Rich calculates the return. So
correct. Our admin would be net of that line.
Right. So the amount, can you scroll up for a moment? So this is tab one, right? So this amount, I believe, should be the 2020 amount minus 310,699.59 plus 2.5%. I think that would be the most accurate way. Is there anyone who could calculate that quickly for me?
I don't fully understand what's going on here. If I may, so we're estimating the administrative expenses based on the conversation about how we have to separate those out on the fiscal year budgets now, correct?
Yes.
And it's important that we determine this now because the city is preparing its fiscal year 22 budget. And on this document, there's the inclusion of investment consulting expenses, which should not be included in the administrative expenses calculation. And so we're pulling that out now. Is that correct?
That's correct. Okay. And then we're going to add 2.5%
I get 259,707.7.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Why are we doing this exercise now? Well, why weren't we presented a sheet that already had the information that we need to review and possibly approve? That's why I'm a little confused.
You're absolutely correct. This is Carolyn. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah, I'm just not comfortable because this is going back and forth. No disrespect to anyone, but this going back and forth it's a bit much for 8:15 in the morning. I would feel more comfortable being presented something that is complete that we can have a full discussion on and consider.
I agree.
But that's just my take. I don't know how the other trustees feel.
This is Trustee Cousin. I concur with both Mayor Elliker and Trustee Ribeiro for the fact that you're asking us to approve a document that is really incomplete. To us, that's not how I would like to do business. So for me, I would like to see all the full numbers. Instead of us doing, you know, addition, subtraction, and multiplication on the spot, we would like to just have all the information so we can actually make a better informed decision to really impact our budget for the next fiscal year.
So,
I think that's appropriate.
Yeah, I think the only concern is the timeline of the city's preparation of the budget. And so unless folks disagree, my suggestion would be that Carolyn, you can work with Richard to and Leanna and team to come up with a more accurate assessment and give that back to us if there's the necessity for us to be have that exact number before our next meeting. We could potentially call a special meeting.
Okay.
I would agree with that, Mayor.
Okay. Does that work with you, Richard, and Carolyn?
Oh, yes. No, I think you need to have a sheet that's correct in order to approve it.
Yeah, okay. We're okay with that.
Let's move on to the experience study.
Okay.
Trustee Cannon, Mayor, I'm sorry I'm late to the party here, but I'm here. This is one of the reasons why, according to our charter, we're supposed to get together in September. This is a past issue that we've had, we've discussed. Our attorney has told us that she probably made a mistake on this procedure. But this
never said that.
We should be doing this in September. This is what the charter says, that we get together to forecast what we're going to present for the mayor to present to the alders. So I just like to point that out. I'm sorry I'm late, but let's keep that in mind, that we're supposed to be doing this by charter, coming together and analyzing all this in September. Thank you.
Thanks, Trustee Cannon. Experience study.
Yes. Thank you, Mayor. Yep. Leanna, can you pull up the experience study? While Leanna's pulling up the experience study, I want to give everybody a little bit of background about how we go about evaluation and why the experience study is important. So just in summary, the way we do evaluation is we go to the city and we say, give us all of the participants in the plan as of July 1, 2020. And we take that, we compare it to the file that we had the prior year, the July 1, 2018 evaluation. We reconcile the data, we look at the new entrants, we look to see who's retired, who's terminated, who's passed away, and we come up with a new database. Once we have that database, we have all of the plan provisions programmed into our system. We take every individual, we project them to retirement, and then eventually project them to death if they're actively employed. If they're retired, we look at the form of benefit that's been elected, we adjust for COLAs into the future, and we project those cash flows out until the person passes away. If you're actively employed, we take into account possibility of turnover, possibility of somebody retiring, possibility of disability, and we estimate benefits for all of those events. And so the output really is a projected cash flow that typically goes out for close to 100 years. We have that projected cash flow. We discount that all back to today using the investment return assumption. So the investment return assumption is a very important assumption to determine liabilities. The higher the interest rate, the lower the liability. The lower the interest rate, the higher the liability. Now, the experience study, what we do is we look at the turnover, the retirement, rates of disability, mortality, and we look at what the plan has experienced for the last 5 years. We compare it to our assumptions to see if our assumptions need to be adjusted. So the analysis of the experience versus the assumptions is what we're going to be presenting today on what we're suggesting, where you make some changes. Some assumptions are okay. They're working well. So we're recommending no changes in those, but that's really the basis of the experience study. once we have these new sets of assumptions, that's what we use to project everything out into the future and then discount everything back. So with that background, if you just look at what's on this executive summary, and we're going to focus on the executive summary today, the exhibits have some of the support for the numerical calculations, but the current basis. So what's the current basis? The current basis is us looking a snapshot July 1, 2020. We look at all the data as of July 1, 2020. We look at the assets as of July 2020 as they're smooth. And then we do our evaluation. We project everything using our assumptions from the last evaluation. So that is what we sometimes refer to as our baseline. So the current basis or the baseline is an accrued liability of approximately $890 million and an annual required contribution of approximately 46.1. So that's the starting point. And what you see down below is if you leave the investment return assumption at 7.75, but make all of the other changes with respect to the experience. And the largest one is probably the mortality table. I'll let Dan talk a little bit about that. But the contribution, the annual required contribution, is an increase of approximately $8 million from the baseline. There's really two decision points in this experience study, the largest one being the investment return assumption, which we'll talk about in a little bit more detail, and also an amortization increase factor that Dan's going to be talking about. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to give you a range so you had the information. So we did another set of runs with all of the recommended changes at 7%, so you can see what impact that had. And that was an annual required contribution of $59.13 million. And for purposes of this discussion, we want to provide you with some estimates using 7.25 and 7.5. So what we did was we basically interpolated between those two numbers. It'll be fairly close. It won't be exact, but it'll be fairly close. So with that, I'm going to turn over the presentation to Dan so Dan can start talking about the mortality basis.
Thank you, Rich. So the next few pages goes over the assumptions that we reviewed along with what our recommended changes are. So starting at the bottom of this page here, we have a brief discussion about mortality tables that are used. Previously, the plan was using an RP2014 table. At the time, this was a standard table to use, but since then, there's been some new tables published by the Society of Actuaries. This table here that we're recommending is a table tailored specifically for public sector employees. The Society published a few different tables, and this one in particular is specified for public safety members. So this ties into police and fire members based on their expected lifetimes. Updating to this new mortality table increases liabilities by about $30 million, and the ADEC contribution increases by about $2.5 million. So this is one of the more impactful assumptions that we've reviewed. Oh, moving on to the following page, we just have about 5 or 6 assumptions that we're going to talk about. Termination rates are the probabilities that fire members stop working and will receive either a vested benefit or a return of contributions. An age and service-based table. So those probabilities that you see there are our current best estimate for the actual plan experience. When we reviewed this assumption, we didn't see any substantial change. So we're not recommending any sort of change this time for this assumption. Below that are the retirement rates. This is a service-based table with different probabilities depending on how many years of service the participant has. There's been some recent plan changes where some folks can retire with less than 20 years of service, provided that they purchase or trade in some sick leave time. So you can see that our current assumption is 3%, but based on recent experience, we've seen that some folks are utilizing that provision of the plan. So our recommendation is to increase that assumption from 3% to 7%. And by doing so, the liabilities move up a small amount, about $700,000, and the ADAC calculation goes up about $100,000. So this isn't a substantial increase, but it is our recommendation that making this change reflects experience. On the next page, we have salary scale. So these are the expected rates of increase on an annual basis for members, and we have an age-based table. You've reviewed the annual pay increases, and they're consistent with the current assumption. So we're not recommending a change at this time. Below that is an assumption that we have labeled here as overtime and longevity pay. Typically, what we see happen is folks will utilize overtime pay in order to increase their final average pay, which would result in an increase in their pension upon retirement. Now, this assumption isn't captured just in our regular salary scale because it's a larger spike at the end of the member's career. So we have a separate load to account for that. You can see we have a load of 32% for police members and 35% for fire members. When we reviewed this assumption, we saw that the trend has been moving upward in more recent years. So our recommendation is to tweak these assumptions upward to 37% for both police and fire members. Doing so increases liabilities by just under $4 million, and the ADAC increases by about $350,000. The next assumption is the COLA buyout assumption. Until the 2020 valuation, we didn't have an assumption for this. We were still reviewing the experience just to see how members are utilizing this provision. What we've seen is over the last few years, folks are electing this buyout approximately 40% of the time. So our recommendation is to add in an assumption for this buyout equal to 40%. Doing so lowers liabilities by about $2.5 million, and ADAC calculation decreases by about $150,000. At the bottom of the page is this another assumption which has a material impact on the ADAC calculation. It's the amortization increase assumption. So right now, the plan is using a 2.5% increase factor. So what that means is for your typical amortization payment, you can think of a loan such as a car or mortgage payment. Each payment is the same for the duration of the loan. But in this case, payments are increasing by 2.5% each year. And what happens is to account for that adjustment, payments are starting low and ending high. What we typically see in municipal plans is a level dollar amount. So this the same payment being made every single year. So our recommendation is to head in that direction by lowering that increase factor from 2.5% down to 1.25%. doing so will still result in payments being increased year to year at a lower rate. So the starting payments will be higher. And by doing that, the ADEC increases by about $4.9 million. Next assumption is the cost of living assumption. So folks are eligible to receive cost of living increases, and depending on their tier, the annual and lifetime caps are a little bit different. So we have that displayed here along with our current and proposed assumption. Inflation has been trending down for some period of time now. And we're looking at a more longer term picture. So we're recommending a small decrease. Depending on the tier, this comes to 10 to 20 basis points. By doing so, that does lower liabilities a little bit. I have here the liabilities decrease by about $5 million, and the ADEC decreases by about $400,000. I'm making it. The next assumption is unused sick time buyback. So currently we're assuming that when participants retire, they'll trade in 3 years worth of service in sick time. We've reviewed this assumption, and the amount of sick time that folks are trading in has been trending upward. Currently it's trending upward closer to 4%. 4 years, but not quite four. So our recommendation is to make a small adjustment upward from 3 years to 3.5 years. This increases liabilities by about $4.5 million, and the ADEC increases by about $600,000, making this change. And the last assumption is to Rich's point, one of the more important assumptions. It's an investment return assumption. Currently, this is at 7.75%. And on the first page, we presented a range of results from 7.75 down to 7%. I'll leave it to the city's investment advisors to chime in, and we can have that discussion about what the most appropriate rate of return would be. The rest of this work, the rest of the study just has our certification as well as some backup papers. But that's really all that I wanted to say about these slides here.
Thanks, Dan. Anything else from the group before we open it up to questions?
That's all we had as far as the presentation is concerned. So we're prepared to answer questions.
Okay. Questions from the committee.
Hi. So you recommended projection is 7% down from the 7.75.
No, we're providing the trustees with a range, and the recommendation is to make sure you have support for that assumption.
But just for clarification, even if you were to keep it at 7.75% rate of return, we would still have to add $8 million to the fund for this upcoming fiscal year.
Correct.
And can you just give a reason why? Just I may have missed that point.
Yeah, I think the primary reason for that increase was the mortality table change. Dan, what was that number again?
So the impact of the new mortality table resulted in the ADEC going up by about $2.5 million.
So the mortality table was a $2.5 million increase. And the other change, which is a decision point for you folks, is the rate of amortization increase, which And the last eval was 2.5. And what we're presenting here is 1.25, just kind of splitting the difference and working towards a level amortization payment.
Richard or Leanna, would you be able to pull up the experience study and the executive summary? I think it's page 1 or 2. So my reading is it's not an increase of 8 million, even if we were to reduce, even if we were not to reduce the rate of return. Correct me if I'm wrong, Richard, but what we are putting in, and Michael Gormley, what we're putting into the PNF pension funds this year is around $39 million. And you're saying that what we should be doing, aside from changing the investment rate of return, is putting in $54.11 million, which is an increase of $15 million, correct?
Yeah, so let me clarify. The $8 million is an increase over our baseline, not what you're currently putting in.
All right, but just for the trustees' benefit, so in this fiscal year, are putting in around $39 million into PNF. And the suggestion here is both that we increase that to $54 million, we're talking about approximately, and potentially increase it to $59 million by reducing the investment rate of return. And so my reading is combined with SERF and the same recommendations you provided in SERF, we're looking at an increase of $15 million for PNF and I think SERF, you're suggesting moving it up without the rate of return increase, another $5 million. So the increase from the city to do what you're recommending even before the change in investment rate return is dramatic. And I shared yesterday with the New Haven Independent that we had a $41 million gap in next year's fiscal year budget without any changes that you're recommending today. So it's pretty significant. What SERF did was continue the item so that it gave us a little bit more time to digest this information and have an ability to think about how we might handle it. And my recommendation is that this committee do the same. Michael Gormley, you unmuted, so I don't know if you have anything to add here.
No, I was just going to say that, Mayor, the numbers you gave were pretty accurate. I think it's like 20 to 21 million. If we keep it at 7.75% for both funds, that the city would have to increase its budget by. And then obviously that number goes up by moving the dial to 7% as the experience studies say. So again, I'm just reiterating what you said, that is a significant jump for the city, and adjusting that is very, very difficult from our end, numbers like that.
Other questions from the committee? You could pull that down, Leanna, thank you. Any other questions?
Trustee Cannon for Hooker and Holcomb. Dan, you had mentioned the COLA 40%. Would you explain a little bit more about that, please?
Yeah, so there's a provision in the plan that states that upon retirement, the member may elect a one-time payment in lieu of future COLA increases. And that value, as defined in the plan, is 40% of actuarial value of the expected increases for the lifetime of the participant. So when folks elect that buyout, they'll receive a one-time payment up front and then no COLA increases for the rest of the time.
Correct. And I understand that. I appreciate you for telling everybody else. But let me further go into that. Basically, if the member, the police or firefighter, elects to take that 40%, that COLA comes off the rolls of the pension. And then the pension does not have to absorb the remainder over time. That increases the positive outlook on this pension, correct?
That's correct. Yes, it's a cost-saving measure to the plan.
Right. And that was not factored into these numbers that you guys have run. You just gave that as an example of things that are options, correct?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand the question.
I don't believe you factor those numbers in, but you're letting us know, you're educating that those are options for this plan also to consider, that they may present themselves in that 40% buyout.
Yeah, so what we've done is we've looked at the past experience, what folks are actually doing, and we're trying to best estimate what will happen in the future. So our current assumption is to assume that 40% of members elect this COLA buyout assumption, and by doing so, that has an impact on the plan liabilities. I'm not sure if that answers your question, though.
No, I understand the question. No, I just want to let everyone know that's what the impact of that commentary was. As I would love to increase the funding ratio to take a lot of pressure off this fund and the city and everything like that, that number and that commentary, as far as trying to assume, I know you're basing it on the last 5 years approximately, because that's when that 40% has been presented to the members and they started taking advantage of it. But we cannot guesstimate what that number, we will not know. You can use an average based on the last 5 years. So it would be careless of me, I'm being transparent and honest, that would be careless of me to assume those and let you portray that we're going to take an average and assume that. Yes, it will make the funding of this pension, but years down the road, we're going to realize that if they don't take that option and they stick to the normal COLA buyout, this pension will be considerably behind as where we need to be. Correct, Dan?
If folks, I guess the answer to the question is by electing the COLA buyout assumption, it does save the plan money. So by not doing so, the opposite will happen.
Correct. And we cannot predict that. So it's not on this. It's not scientific. There is an average that you can measure, but you can't forecast in the future how many people are going to elect to take that. So I want to be transparent. I'd love to let everybody at this board believe that we'll be able to knock the numbers down as far as the unfunded and all that stuff percentage wise. But realistically, you can't factor that number in. And then we'll get caught with our pants down 10 years down the road when we realize the trend that you're basing it on is not consistent in the future. We'll go backwards on what we're trying to accomplish.
Well, let me just add to what Dan explained. I mean, the 40% assumption is the best information we have available today.
It's a gamble.
It's the, all of our assumptions are based on the best information available. This is the best information we have available. In the next experience study, we will analyze it and look at 5 more years of experience and see if that produces anything different.
I understand, Richard. I just want everyone to understand. I know you're giving me the best. Everybody can do a median average, a means, whatever you want to look at. Anybody can do that. We can look at the last, how many people took advantage of this over the last 5 years? Okay, 80 people took it. Divide it by 5 years, there's your number. That doesn't mean that number. That's the best analysis you can give us. But this board needs to understand that that's still not careless on your part. You're doing your job. You're presenting based on past trends, but it's very, very risky going forward to base it on those trends, because you're going to need to, if that person doesn't elect that 40% buyout, you're going to need to forecast the remaining 60, and you're going to be left with, we don't have it. Okay. I need the board to understand that, Richard. So I understand your position. You're an actuary. You're a very smart man. I understand everything you just said. And that last thing, you're covering yourself. This is the best information we can give you to cover what we have to, but let's be transparent here. That could be very dangerous for this fund in the future, but you are giving us true theory in the sense that you're saying we're going to average over the 5 years to trend the way it's gone. That may not be that trend in the future. There's no science to it at all. There is, you can analyze an average, but you can't use that going forward. Correct, Richard?
Well, I would add to that is the election rate could be higher or lower.
Correct.
If the election rate is higher, there will be savings. If the election rate is lower, there'll be costs.
And the cost would be 60%. The 40 that they didn't take plus the 60 is 100%. Then we're really caught behind. Correct, Richard?
Well, it depends on what happens in the future. It could go either way.
Okay. It depends on that individual electing to take 40% buyout of their COLA. Correct?
Correct.
I will give you a list of 1,000, which is made up of, no, I'll give you 700, which is 400 police officers active, and I'll give you 300 firefighters. You pick which ones are going to take the 40%. Do you have any science to that?
The numbers that we generate are based on experience and averages. So on an individual basis, no.
This perk of 40% just became available about 4 years ago. I don't have the actual date. Shaking your head. Say yes, Richard. Yes.
Sorry. Yep.
So 4 years ago, you're basing on the last 4 years. Listen, you're doing your job. I appreciate that. You're trying to grab onto something that'll help the funding of this. It doesn't look good, but I'm not gonna not explain that there was a big risk going forward to this fund if we take your four-year analysis and try to forecast the next 20 years of that. It's not gonna work. In all fairness, Chair Elicker, I just want to point that out. I'm not trying to be a hindrance to this process, but we need to understand that. That's an enormous gamble. We talk about gambles with pension obligation bonds. Understand, we're not even going there with this, but this board is trended towards, we're not going to take those kind of risks going forward.
Mr. Cannon, I appreciate your comments, and I think it's important to underscore that no one on the committee is questioning the integrity of the analysis, and what Mr. Cannon is 100%. Highlighting it. Let me finish.
Go ahead.
What Mr. Cannon is highlighting, I think, is important to underscore that these are estimates based on information available to us, and the COLA is one component that potentially could have a downside, but there are other components that the actuaries are recommending we put more in the fund because, for example, they're estimating more people are going to take advantage of the sick leave buyout and use overtime in the remaining years to increase their retirement. So that too is an estimate, and they're recommending we put more money in the fund because of that. It may turn out that people do not end up taking as much advantage of that, and it saves us money. So this is an estimate of what the potential impact of the fund is down the road to guide the city in appropriately funding the annual payments.
Mayor, I appreciate that explanation. Yes, this Hooker and Holcomb is doing their job. No one's questioning their integrity or anything like that. But I want to everyone to understand that, yes, there are potential savings to this fund, but there are potential pitfalls. And we all need to understand that. We need to all get a clear understanding of that. I would love to try to work this out magically where we trend this underfunding down so the city doesn't, or the ratios down so the city doesn't have to come up with as much money as they do. You and I sat on the SURF meeting the other day. I think you and I both realized where this is going. Unfortunately, you know, with the budget issues of the city, your back is up against the wall within the next month or so to produce numbers for a budget. I'll reiterate back to September. We were supposed to have this discussion then. That's a pass. I'm not going there again. So what I'm just letting everyone understand is I appreciate what Hooker and Holcomb's doing. I just want everyone to understand there's potential savings in that COLA. There's also potential pitfalls if we assume and it doesn't trend the way they want to use the last year for a year analysis. But that is the best data available to them at this moment right now. I get it. Let's talk about the overtime. And you mentioned something else, sick time buyback. That has always been there. So it's not something new. I don't want to even go into there. That's contractual. It's in the contract. It's a hard line understanding. So that's just a factor they're going to have to deal with in the equation. So thank you for your time.
Are there any other questions from trustees? Yeah, I might before we vote on this. I think it's important for people to understand the gravity of the situation. So between SURF and PNF, looked at the numbers a little bit more. We're looking at, without changing the investment rate of return, an additional $17.8 million put into both funds annually. With reducing the rate of return from 7.75 to 7, we're looking at $25 million put into these funds. So the recommendation is that the city put a lot more money into these funds. It's the right thing to do. We should do it. The question is, I mean, let's be honest, and a lot of cities are struggling with this, with a $41 million gap next year in our budget that we're looking at right now and trying to address that. And you add to that either $17 or $25 million, that means that we might fully and appropriately address issues around the pension fund, but entertain massive layoffs. And as an example of how we would get to that number. And so this is a very challenging situation that we're facing as a city. None of us created this situation, but it's not as easy as just let's fund the pension fund fully and follow the recommendations, because we just don't have a lot of good options right now. I think Mr. Cotto, the head of the police union, underscored what I agree 100% with. Cutting the police department budget in half is not a viable option. We've had 5 homicides this year already. That's not a viable option. So we on the city side will be working to assess the best way forward here. But I think that it's fair to say that we can't simply fully follow these recommendations unless we get additional revenue from the state or Yale University. We're in a very difficult situation, and I think the next couple of weeks we're going to be having some very difficult decisions about how to move forward. I appreciate the work, Richard, you and your team did on this.
Thank you.
So I hope that there's a willingness to move to continue the item.
Mayor, this is Trustee Cousin. I move that we table the item for further discussion.
Is there a second? And Trustee Cousin, are you tabling it or continuing it? The difference with the table is that the committee has to move to take it off the table in the future. The move to continue just allows it to be put on the agenda more easily.
I would be allow it to continue it.
Is there a second? Mr. Cannon seconded. Trustees, how do you vote? Trustee Cousin?
Yes.
Trustee Cannon?
Yes.
Trustee McDermott?
Yes.
Trustee Ribeiro?
Yes.
Trustee Nunez?
Yes.
And I am a yes. So the item is continued. Moving on to item 3D, update on the pension portal.
Hi, this is Leanna Ambersley. This is just a quick update letting you guys know that the online pension portal, which will allow employees to, from home, look up potential estimates for the future, should be going into effect in February. We meet about every other week with Hooker and Holcomb to go over the implementation. So that should be going into effect next month.
Mr. Cannon.
Just like to ironically point out the last time we were together with Hooker and Holcomb, it was approximately 2 years ago. Is that correct? Yeah, Mr. Syke, Richard?
Regarding?
Well, last time we sat down to talk about the initial portal was approximately 2 years ago. The last time we set the arc.
I don't recall specifically about the last meeting on the portal. Remember, the contract was signed about a year ago.
Contract was signed a year ago. We negotiated a year prior to that with Mayor Harp at pushing and Jerry Sagnella on the board. It's just ironic. It was 2 years ago, and we're here now, just realizing that it's going to go into effect in February. That's another area I'd like to revisit, looking at that portal. We haven't seen it in so long, so I'd like to be refreshed. I think Mayor Elliker should be refreshed on it also.
Appreciate the suggestion, Mr. Cam. Any other questions from the
trustees? Always there for you, Mayor.
Any other questions from the trustees? Okay. It seems like there is no need for a vote on this item. Item four.
Excuse me, Mayor. This is Carolyn Cohn. Attorney Strother is here if you wanted to return to item 3A.
I will do. Thanks for the reminder. Go ahead.
Can you hear me all right?
We can.
Thank you. At the December 30 meeting, the board approved a $5 million investment in an investment partnership by the name of Chart National LP. And the partnership documentation includes an indemnity clause whereby PNF would have to indemnify the partnership and its various affiliates if anything that PNF did caused them damages, liabilities, and so forth. This is typical. The board does have a policy, however, as does SURF, that the fund will not enter into any indemnification clauses without specific board approval. You have a one-page handout on this, and in the middle of it is paragraph 15. That is the indemnity clause from Chart National. We found that the standard language was pretty good. It only says that PNF would be liable for things that arise out of its own derelictions. But we did negotiate what we think is an improvement to that by way of a side letter, which is a variance basically from the standard language. It was one of three areas, the others being confidentiality and choice of law. This is the third one, about six lines down in the paragraph 15, and again about four lines up is some italicized language that Chart National agreed to add, and it provides that PNF will be liable for an indemnification only to the extent that something arises solely out of PNF's misrepresentation or breach, et cetera. The idea there is that if something starts with PNF, let's say a minor misrepresentation or a minor breach, and then someone in the partnership office makes it 10 times worse, that PNF would only be liable for 1/10 of the resulting damages. So they agreed to that, and it's now in there as a only to the extent rising solely out of PNF. Otherwise, it certainly meets the policy of the board to avoid any indemnification clauses that would require indemnity for things that are the fault of someone else. And that just sharpens it up. So I'd be pleased to entertain any questions, and if not, put it back to the chair to see if the board would like to move to approve the indemnification language from the Chart National investment.
Questions from the committee?
Just question as far as, are we supposed to be in executive session on this? Is there anything in this information that shouldn't be publicized?
No, that's... under the confidentiality clause, we had some improvements on that too, but no, this is entirely public, and they have agreed.
I know that we have discussed this many times in the past on our partnerships that are in courts where we're very small partners. What's our percentage in this partnership, please?
I don't have that information. It's $5 million.
Which is a lot of money, but I believe in the scope of the partnership, I think it's a very low percentage. Is that correct, Carolyn?
Well, this would be a question probably more for Raymond James in terms of...
Mr. Moran, can you handle this question?
Sure. So the capital raises for private equity firms often come in different tranches. So they'll start a capital raise beginning of the year. They'll get closing numbers from LPs for the first 2 months. So long story short, with a full raise, this would probably equal anywhere from 3 to 5% of the total fund of our equity stake would be. So a small percentage versus the larger general partner's total fund.
And correct me, David, if your memory it might be better than mine, as far as we've discussed, is this individual partnership issue, we've discussed it in the past where we're a very minute partner. We do not drive the bus, so to speak, on this issue, correct?
Yeah, I mean, everything that the attorneys are talking about is very common for what we've done with all of our private equity and private investments in the past. A lot of it, and Carolyn and Jack had helped me with that, but some of it's the state of Connecticut rules. Also, it's some stuff that we just feel more comfortable with as far as indemnification. But it's very, very similar to most of the funds that we've invested in. And absolutely in general, we are minority LPs in these funds. Which in my opinion is sometimes a good thing because there's monster pensions out there from other cities and states that put bigger stakes in there. And we tend to obviously not want to be a huge partner with an individual general partner because it takes on more risk. I'd rather de-risk the investment by having multiple LPs. So this is right in line with everything we've done with the, you know, 24 other private investments we have.
Okay, and with this specific pension, with this specific partnership, is this one of the past details that we've talked about that where we're going to have you monitor everything rather than get the attorneys involved?
Yes. I mean, the contractual end of it is Brenner Salzman. When it comes to everything else, it's our team at Raymond James that does the continual monitoring. When something legal comes up, which you've had in the past, it gets taken back to attorneys. But once this contract is signed, which I'm hoping it is signed very shortly, they are doing their first capital call. And the capital call means that they take money from the fund and they start investing it. So that's very soon. So I'm glad that we've got this taken care of. But again, it would be in our hands to monitor. I'm in constant contact with pretty much every single investment within the fund. So yes, it's our job to do that. And if something legal pops up, we'll put it back to Brenner Salzman.
But you would get notification of the legal aspect of it first, correct?
Absolutely.
Is that something you could bring to this board first?
I always do. Yes, absolutely.
Prior to the lawyer having to get involved?
Well, I can't do the legal, so I would absolutely bring it to the board first, through the board. Then the board has the opportunity to bring it to Brenner Salzman. I don't usually ever contact legal directly about anything like this until it's brought to the board, brought to Brenner Salzman. We do have side conversations, Carolyn and I and Jack, about details regarding contracts. But as far as any other issue, it's brought to the board. It's the trustees that actually have the authority to make those type of decisions, not myself.
Thank you, Dave. Well, that's all.
Thank you, Trustee Ken. Any other questions? So, Attorney Strother, Attorney Cohn, you're looking for a vote to approve the language here?
Yes, it would be a motion that the indemnification clause from the Chart National LP investment be approved.
Do I hear that motion?
So moved.
Trustee McDermott moved the item. Is there a second? Trustee Cannon?
Second.
Trustee Cannon seconded. Okay, trustees, how do you vote? Trustee Nunez?
Trustee Nunez, I believe, had to leave at 9 o'clock.
Okay. Trustee Cousin?
Yes.
Trustee Ribeiro.
Yes.
Trustee McDermott.
Yes.
Trustee Cannon.
Yes.
And I am a yes, so that item passes. I'd note for the record, age annuity retirement information only. Linwood Lockett, William Gargone, Sir Ray Sirocco, Paul Cavalier, Carol LaCroix, and Jeffrey Brabham. I'd also note item 5, contribution withdrawals, information only, Travis Miller and Paul Mandel. Item 6, age annuity retirement and service-connected disability. Any comments on this item from Leanna or others?
With no comments, I'd like to make a motion to accept the disability request for firefighter Ezra Goodwin based on medical reports that we can't discuss about in open public forum.
This is Trustee Cousin, second.
Okay, so Trustee Cannon made the motion, Trustee Cousin seconded. Any discussion? Trustee Cousin, how do you vote?
Yes.
Trustee Cannon?
Yes.
Trustee Ribeiro?
Yes.
Trustee McDermott?
Yes.
And I am a yes. The item passes. Item 7, death after retirement, information only, Ralph Cacace.
That would be police officer Ralph Cacace.
Thank you. Appreciate that correction, Ralph Cacace. Item 8, survivor, death after retirement, information only, Eleanor Poulin and Jacqueline Smith. I'd ask the trustees to take a moment of silence for the passing of those individuals. Item 9, payment of the bills. Is there a motion to approve payment of the bills?
Motion.
Mr. Cannon made the motion. Is there a second?
Trustee Cousin, second.
Haven't been moved and seconded. Any discussion on the bills? Any questions here? Okay. Trustee Cousin, how do you vote?
Yes.
Trustee Ribeiro?
Yes.
Trustee McDermott?
Yes.
Trustee Cannon?
Yes.
And I am a yes. The item passes. Item 10, any old business? Item 11, any new business? All right, let's go back to item 1, the investment report. I apologize, I have to hop off for a meeting. Trustee Cannon, can you take it from here?
Yes. Mayor, I got on the meeting late, so I apologize, but I just want to know, is there any other items that are not been addressed? It's just this last item?
I believe so.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your time today.
Thanks for taking over. Good to see everyone.
Anytime, anytime, Mayor. I told you, I got your back.
Yes, Mayor.
Mr. Moran, it becomes your show. Next item up.
Sure. I sent a bunch of attachments. So, Leanna, if you could pull up the two reports, actually, the last report that I sent you. In fact, if you show me what, let's see here. Let's see. Okay, just go down one page. I just want to see. Oh, sorry. Just one. One more. Perfect. Maybe you want to make that a little larger so I can see it. Everybody good with that? Okay.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to talk about today is basically the last 3 months and the end of year report. So this is the end of December. So it's a 3 month number. Then you have the fiscal year, which is basically from, you know, obviously July 1st through December 31st. So as you can see, our valuation as of the end of the fiscal year for police and fire was $319 million. So all of that information coming from Hooker and Holcomb is related to that number. Just to put it in perspective, and it'll come up in the next meeting, at the last page of that document that you had, it talks about our numbers for the last 25 years. So you can look at that. It'll be coming up in the next meeting. But if you do have a chance between now and then, it's something that you want to consider taking a look at. So with that said, we can obviously all see that the fund has been really, really doing well in the last 6 months. The first 6 months of the year obviously was extraordinarily tough times with the pandemic and everything that went with it. Ironically, we're still in a pandemic, and you know, Main Street is still suffering. Wall Street obviously looks ahead and tries to discount that. So the market in itself has been incredibly good as it's been for a very long time within the last 6 months. So if you look at the last 3 months for the fund, looking at a double-digit number of close to 15%, fiscal year to date, 21%. So 6 months, 21%. If we could just put the thing on full brakes and put it to cash, that'd be great. But the way in which these funds work is not looking at 6 months. It's actually not even looking at 1 year. As we talked about with Hooker and Holcomb, we actually look at these funds over 30 years, 25 years to be exact on their report. So we're off to a good start this fiscal year. It doesn't mean we're not going to stay fully allocated. This money is in perpetuity. So we're managing this money in the base, you know, in the idea that it's going to be around for another 100 years. I know we had a meeting before this about everything else. So I'll try to be fairly brief because the news is pretty good. As you can see, we outperformed our benchmark in the last 6 months also. If you go down to U.S. equities, what you're going to see here is that all of them are in very, very good shape. Now, this fund, before we get into individual managers, this fund is pretty well diversified. It wasn't really overweighted in all large cap stocks, and definitely not overweighted in all large cap growth stocks, just the way some of these funds are built. So we have the ability to capitalize on the fact that the market went straight up in many directions, but towards the end of the year, it really tried to spread it out, and large cap, mid cap, and small cap, and international all started working in unison. So that's what you want in a market. You want the breadth of the market, meaning that more asset classes start going in the same direction. So if you go down to Sizer, one of our biggest fund managers, Sizer's done very well. You know, again, up 16%, 22% in the fiscal year to date. You can look all the way down this line. Everything seems to start with a two or a three. So equities have been the place to be in the last 6 months. Aristotle's doing their job, especially in the long term. Cook and Beeler, who is a very large partner of ours, both in police and fire and surf, has done very, very well, double digits, almost up 30% in the last 6 months. And again, that's a mid-cap portfolio. So now all of a sudden, instead of everything in large cap going straight up, it's starting to blend into mid and small. I know Surf's made some good decisions to kind of get in that direction. We've been in that direction, so we're catching up on some of that again, breadth of the market moving in that direction. So if you look down a little bit further, Mutual of America doing great. One of our index funds is doing their job, the 11 million. We have Clearbridge Small Cap, which again, small caps were out of favor for a very long time. But you know, when we look at an economy that's going to get better, small caps tend to outperform. So Clearbridge has done a good job on the growth side, and Cook and Beeler on the value side has come back also. So now you're seeing, unlike what I've been talking about for the last year, now you're seeing growth and value starting to perform similarly. And that's what you want. Before it was all growth and value was out of favor. So Channing, below that, again, is a small cap, kind of a core manager, a little tilt towards value, but again, up 35 and 39%. So can't complain about any of those numbers. If they did that every year, we wouldn't be having these conversations with Hooker and Holcomb. We'd be in much better shape. So if you go down to the next page. These are non-US investments. Alcyon's in there. I mean, because it says offshore, it should be moved to the alternative section, which I'll do. It's just sometimes we do a report with just what's called the long-only investments and not the alternatives. Alternatives tend to lag in their reporting. Alcyon does not. Alcyon's an investment that prices once a month. Again, very, very good numbers. If you look at their inception number, annualized per year at 23%, fantastic number. I think you'll see their final number, which I don't think is on this report because it came out later in January. I think they had a number of closer to 40% for the year, which is unbelievable. WCM, international manager, they've been on fire. Manager that manages money in both funds, Surf and Police and Fire. You look at their any year number, it looks good. The next one's an index fund. I have to worry about that. Lazard, a smaller position. Great numbers also. So I'm repeating myself, but it's just one of those times where things have been good. Below that's fixed income. Fixed income has done well. You know, part of those numbers that Hooker and Holcomb comes up with for future returns has to do with fixed income. So, you know, rates are still very low. Chairman Powell just talked yesterday about rates again, and he's talking about the new Treasury Secretary Yellen working with them hand in hand, and rates are going to stay low. You know, if rates stay low, and we can get small, single digit numbers out of our bond managers, that's great. If rates and inflation go up, we're going to see, bond managers probably struggle, but they're there for a purpose. We follow our investment policy statement. We follow asset allocation, and we just try to get these managers to take as least risk as possible based on the fact that eventually rates will probably go up. They got down to 0.5% during the beginning of the pandemic. They're back to 1%, which we believe is healthy. But if they go back to 4 or 5, then you're going to see compression in some of these returns based on the fact that, again, the price of bonds and interest rates have an inverse relationship. So I'm not going to go through each and every manager because of that. You can go down and go through the alternatives. I'm not going to get into each and every one of them. I'm happy that Chart's approved. Are the attorneys still on the call?
Yes.
Joan, what's the situation with timing on getting that document signed? The actual contract?
We've given it to the mayor for signature. And this is talking about Chart Capital, this is Carolyn. So everything went over 2 days ago, and I think the mayor's assistant said that today she would bring it to the mayor for signature.
Okay. All right. That's Anna, right? Very good. Okay. You can go down to the very bottom again, and here's some other good news. Go down one more. Keep on going. There you go. Just to the bottom of that, and then we're going to go to the next page. So we've had some cash accumulation. That's a good thing. We got the money from the city, the ARC, which is, paying benefits and going out the door. So when I look at that $15 million, it's pretty much earmarked towards future benefits. You know, we're sending out a ton of money to Northern Trust every month. Those numbers have gone up probably close to 40% in the last 5 years. So we do have to have a significant amount of cash on hand. If you go below that to the next page, even though these alternatives at times are complicated, talking about GPs and LPs and all this stuff that is kind of super boring, but these investments are not very liquid. They're difficult to report on because they're always in arrears or they're lagging, and it's tough to make it, common sense of it on a monthly basis. But the way in which these investments work, they tend to kick out a ton of cash in the later years of their investments. So we do what's called capital calls. We commit $5 million. We give it to a firm like Chart. They take that money. They have a 10-year deal. The first 1, 2, 3, 4 years, you're not going to see any returns. Most of the time you see actually negative returns. It's called a J curve. But at the end of these investments, and we do have a significant amount of legacy investments that were bought years ago, when these investments become mature in those last 7 to 10 years, they start putting money back into our pockets. And that's the way it works. That's why they've been a good asset class in the long run. It's not a great asset class if you want to make money in the next 3 months. It's definitely not game stock. I'm sure everybody's watching the TV. But the beauty of that is that all of these assets have been held at BNY, which is separate custodian. They kick out of the cash. So now our cash balance over there is north of $17 million. So now we have that $17 million plus the $15 million. And that gives us a little wiggle room to be buying into situations like we're having right now. We are still in a secular bull market, in our opinion. However, in secular bull markets, there are pullbacks. We are definitely due for a little bit of a pullback here. Everything has gone straight up in the last 3 months. No one's complaining about it. No one in their 401k is complaining about it. You need to be of an understanding that it doesn't last forever. Yesterday was a little bit of a wake-up call to say, hey, market's moving in both directions. And so the ability to have this cash levels is good. Maybe not going out and hiring new managers every single month, which we will take a look at doing, but we can add to asset classes that we already own in equities on dips. So we'll be talking about that over the next month or two, and we'll come up with some recommendations as to how we take advantage of those opportunities. Because again, we're not bearish. We think equities are a place to be, and we're going to buy on weakness and pullbacks. So if you want to go to the tab that says Surf Talk, I'm sorry about that, but Derek and I work together with our team. We both work for Raymond James, and we both read the same research. Even though these funds are different, it doesn't mean that we're not looking at the same big picture ideas. So if you want to kick that up to, say, 80%, and I'm sure all of you have spent the last week reading this word for word, so I'm not going to repeat what you've already read, which I'm kidding. So I'm going to highlight just the stuff that really matters, and I'm not going to read from that. So all you do is just take a look at the right-hand side of the paper. It kind of goes to what I was talking about. The S&P 500 is market cap weighted, meaning that the bigger companies like the Apples and the Facebooks and the Teslas now have been driving the market straight up. When I talk about mid-cap and small caps, you know, coming back and starting to outperform, that's why you see the number below the S&P on the right-hand side, the equal weighting is higher now. And that's a good thing because it's actually come back to be, again, more breadth in the market. And you're seeing that as you go down. Also, if you go a little bit farther down, Leanna, you're starting to see a little bit of rotation, you know, not only between just market capitalization, but now within sectors. So sectors like energy and financials were huge laggards. Everything that was going up was information technology, real estate, communications, that type of stuff. So you're seeing a rotation in that again, which is good. You know, we have value, which tends to lead towards energy and financials, and we have growth. So we wanted to kind of balance out. And the reason why we're so diverse in our investment policy statement and in our asset allocation is because not everything moves in the same direction at the same time. So we try to lower our risk and try to gain as much as we can on the upside with the appropriate amount of risk taken. If you want to go down one more page, very simply, there's still problems out there. Just because the stock market's on a tear, it doesn't mean that the rest of the economy is in the same situation. There's a divergence again between Main Street and Wall Street. So we have a lot of work to do. And I know that the new administration's trying to get that in the right direction. And I know that the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department are trying to do the same thing. So we're still far away from unemployment, full unemployment numbers that we want. Usually 670, we want to get down to about 4. The number below that talks about inflation. We're trying to keep inflation low, even though sometimes a little bit of inflation is good. But right now we're trying to keep that steady. And then we're below that, you have what I was talking about with the Federal Reserve. We're going to have an accommodating Federal Reserve, which is going to continue to pump assets and money into the system, providing liquidity, keeping rates low, and hopefully, stimulating an economy coming out of a pandemic that will be much healthier. One more page, and I'll leave you with that because I'm not going to talk ad nauseum about it. But if we go down one more page, it just talks about the top part, talks about, hey, where we were and where we think we're going. The numbers coming out of Wall Street now are very, very good. They should be going into next year. Think about what happened. Everybody got crushed. So the numbers were not good. If things rebound, you're going to see an incredible movement in earnings. So, the market's pretty much been, looking at that for the last 6 months and expecting in the future things will rebound. So we're looking at huge growth in earnings this year, probably some of the biggest GDP numbers we've seen in 2 decades. But again, coming off a situation where we had some of the worst in 2 decades. So a big pendulum swing on that. Earnings look good. They're starting to beat. There's still risk on momentum, meaning that there's still risk on investments and stocks. We are, again, to culminate this conversation and to open it up to questions, we're going to stay fully allocated. We're going to look for continued new investments and on pullbacks, not just one day pullbacks, but on pullbacks during long-term bull markets. We're looking to take advantage of that with cash, which we have right now. And I know when we get back to the next Hooker and Holcomb conversation, and it didn't come up today, but on the last page of that report, we'll talk about some of our long-term numbers when it comes to what we're trying to accomplish here with the pension. And we'll have that slide for next one. It looks at our 5, 10, and 25-year numbers, and you'll see how the you know, how these funds work with up and down years, and we're trying to average it out over 5, 10, 25 years, and I think we're close to doing that job. So with that said, I'll open up for any questions, and otherwise I'll leave you guys to adjourn.
Any of the trustees have any questions? Just identify yourself and ask Dave.
This is Trustee Cousin. Do you think we could get on the Reddit train real quick? Just see what.
It was up to $500 this morning. I mean, I've been doing this job for 24 years, which on Wall Street is not very long. And I remember back in 1999 when I owned AOL and it went up about $100 and I thought I was rich. I think I had about 20 grand. I thought I was rich and I, you know, it was the most money in the world. This is a phenomenon that, hey, it's David versus Goliath, and David right now is winning. And they're targeting companies that are not the greatest companies. And I'm not going to get into why, but it has to do with the amount of shares that are, you know, shorted against the company. And these chat rooms are going after companies that are weak, and they're buying into these stocks that are going straight up based on the fact that there's a lot of people out there that bet against them. And now they're starting to lose their bets. So it's insanity. In fact, I'm looking at American Airlines today, who came out with mediocre numbers, and the stock's up about 70%. Because you know why? Because American Airlines is largely shorted on Wall Street. So all these hedge funds and other people that were, you know, taking advantage of the fact that these companies were weak are seeing a little bit of a turnaround here with the younger crowd in these chat rooms saying, hey, let's go after Goliath and let's put some pressure on these guys. And unfortunately, when you're betting against the stock and it starts going up, the only thing you could do is try to get out of it by buying more of it. And that's how that works. So I bet you by next month, we'll have a very different take on the game stocks of the world going forward. So it's interesting to say, at least. I watch it a lot. I'm sure you guys do too.
I should invest in GameStop given, you know, the shortage of the PlayStation 5. But I was curious, you know, why now that, you know, companies, young people are deciding to actually, you know, invest the way they're investing now to really go after, you know, hedge fund companies?
Yeah, so it's a great, you know, I had a conversation with I had a conference call with my 22-year-old and my 20-year-old about this, because they're that generation. You know, they look at Robinhood, which is a trading site for young people. They look at, you know, other chat rooms. This Reddit is the thing that's driving all this. And, you know, they go online and listen. It's public information to see how many companies out there are very, very shorted. So these big hedge funds who have been working in these black boxes, meaning that you don't know what they do with their money. Listen, we own Alcyon. Alcyon's a hedge fund, and they've done a phenomenal job. Do you see every investment within that fund when I report these numbers? No. Do I see every investment in that fund? I don't. So it's more of a black box, meaning that they have their own little secret thing. But there are information portals out there that I could look at, and so can Derek and the rest of our team, that show heavily shorted stocks. So I shouldn't call them kids, but these kids get online after they look at all of these companies that are in really, really bad shape and everyone's betting against them. And they go in there and say, hey, let's buy this one. And they go after GameStop. GameStop's a, you know, a brick and mortar retail company struggling to sell games in malls versus Microsoft, you know, Xbox, where you're downloaded them. So they just target companies that are being bet against. And what happens is the stocks start going up. These big hedge funds that bet against them have to cover their positions. And without getting too much detail, when you short a stock, you sell it first and then you buy it back to get out of your position. Very, very complicated if you're hearing it for the first time, but it exacerbates this insanity when it comes to stocks going straight up. So, and by the way, I actually did a screen yesterday because I said, I wonder if any of the managers that we hired happen to own GameStop in their portfolio. And the answer is no. So we didn't get any advantage of that craziness, but maybe one of the ones coming up in the near future. I think regulators will be talking to us soon about how this is all going to play out. Derek, you got any chime in on that? Otherwise,
I appreciate that. I mean, in jeopardy of losing some of the trustees here. So I don't want to get too far off on that. That's for another day, another discussion. Yep. It's not related to what we have in our fund right now. Nope. Dave, can you give me a fast guesstimate of where we are 2020 calendar year? How do we do it on the market for the fund overall percentage?
2000, You're talking about the calendar year for the fiscal year or right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, fiscal year. Whatever numbers you can give me.
Yeah, sure. For the fiscal year, which is on that last page of the report, 7.21% for 2020 fiscal year, which ended this past June 30th.
7.21?
Correct. The year before that, 7.04. It's in that Hooker and Holcomb.
Yeah.
If you look back over 10 years, non-compounded 9.7%. And over 20 years, 9.27%. Over 25 years, 9.27% is the 25-year average return.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? I want to point out that Dave, you and your team do a great job. We really appreciate you. I know Derek is on the call. You have another assistant on there, Ron Vale. I know he's been helpful every time I've called to ask a question. He's on point. I appreciate you guys. I advise all the other trustees, if you have any questions, Reverend Cousins, along the lines of Reddit and GameStop, I'm going to be calling these guys on those questions too, offline. But once again, thank you for everything you guys do for us. We appreciate it. And I want to take a moment to thank the Hooker and Holcomb people. I know it gets a little tough there sometimes, but we appreciate everything you guys do for us also. It's just trying to understand all this stuff, where we're going with funding from whatever resource we're getting it from. We have to be on top of it. And going forward, I know that this board here, with this new administration, is doing everything. This current board has been around. I shout out to Evelise and Brian and Cousins and our new Reverend Cousins and our new trustee Paul Nunez. We're all in this, and we're doing a great job trying to stay on top of this and understand this and write this, try to get on ahead of the game. So I really appreciate that. And with that, I'll take a motion for adjournment, unless anyone else has anything to say.
I was going to say thank you for the love fest. Great way to start off my day.
I drank decaf on the way in.
I'm loving it. I'm loving this side of you. Thank you, everyone. And I move for adjournment.
I got a motion for adjournment from Evelise Rivero. Thank you, cuz. A second's been made. All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? Nay. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leanna.
Thank you.